Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. I'm one of your hosts. Sitting across the table from me right now, my wife, Bianca Reichert.
That's me.
How are you doing, honey?
I'm great. We are the gorgeous hosts of PTS.
Okay. All
the,
right.
Gopes.
What?
The Gopes.
The acronym. The gorgeous host of...
That would be not a word that we could say.
No, it's a bad acronym.
Maybe someone who's fluent in a different language is accustomed to those letters being up against each other, but we are not.
No, and regardless, not as good of an acronym as GLOW.
It's a perfect acronym.
GLOW is a great acronym.
Dan and I actually had a conversation about acronyms the other day.
Acronyms versus abbreviations, all that stuff.
We tried to figure out what our favorite acronym was. I don't remember.
I liked STARS from Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah. I remember... We got Miles from Save the Animals Rescue Team. Start.
Save the Animals Rescue Team. Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Wait, so STARS and START. I guess just the only good acronyms just have STAR in it.
You know what I found spending like an inordinate amount of time working in my day job in databases and stuff? Is that so many words and names start with the letter S. It's a very, very I would say it's one of the most used first letters.
That
might not be true, but.
Well, that's like Wheel of Fortune. You know, they give you the super common ones, right? Like R-S-T-L-N-E? Is that the ones they give you?
I don't know. I don't really watch Wheel of Fortune, Dan.
I don't either, but I used to play the NES game. And I've seen a few episodes, and I think they gave you like the gimmies. Like, hey, listen, everyone's just going to pick R, S, or T right away, so let's just go ahead and get those off the board.
I would think the vowels would be picked first.
Well, there's a whole mechanic for the vowels. You got to purchase a vowel, things like that. That's a different thing. They're so common that you have to like buy them with your like pool of money, I think.
Okay.
It's been like 15 years since I've seen Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
It could be a totally different thing now.
Hmm.
Vanna White hasn't been actually like turning the things for a good 20-something years, I think.
She just touches the... letters on the touchscreen?
Yeah, the technology got advanced decades ago, I think.
I feel like something like that, a classic show like Wheel of Fortune, should retain the textile nature of it.
That is why I do appreciate the current presentation of, like, The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal, mm-hmm. where they still very much keep that aesthetic, that, like, hey, this is, like, 70s game show-ass aesthetic. Like, I think that's cool.
I like games where you have to grab things, like, there are props and stuff. That's why I really like that game Santorini that we played a few times the other day, where you get to build the little buildings and you have the cute little builders.
That one's fun.
It's so cute.
It's a board game that I like a lot. We should play that again sometime soon. Mm-hmm. Also, Double Dare, the obstacle course, or the physical challenges, where you always had to wear like some Tupperware bucket on your head while someone threw like snot water balloons at it.
So that one, that game was definitely more brawn-centric than brain-centric.
Oh, boy. Double Dare was brains and brawn, mm-hmm. because you had to answer questions. Mark Summers would read the question, and there were the two families, or two teams. You know, family Double Dare is a different thing. Mm-hmm. But you'd go back and forth. So if you didn't know the answer to the question, you would dare the other family, like, dare.
Okay.
And if they say Double Dare, you can either answer, and I think at that point it's worth more money, or you can take the physical challenge where it's just, like, booger central, or, you know, there's a toilet above your head. And
often would someone attempt to answer? After giving the dare, because I feel like if they weren't confident in the first place,
that was rare. So that's why, yeah, Double Dare. You know, it was rare. That would be a weird move. Like, you would have to be pretty confident that the other team wouldn't know the answer. Mm-hmm. So it's like dare, and then you cash in.
I was just thinking about that time you and I were watching old Nickelodeon game shows on YouTube. And I just became absolutely fixated on whether or not a game show was more brain-centric or prawn-centric.
I can't remember.
Drugs were not involved at all.
I can't remember. I think we were watching Guts, Nickelodeon Guts.
We watched a few different ones.
Well, we did, but
we watched Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah,
one with the rock that you really want.
We watched Legends of the Hidden Temple. We watched Guts. But I think the brains versus brawn conversation started while we were watching Guts, mm-hmm. because I think I just said, like, oh, yeah, you know, there's different types of game shows. There's there's Brains one, the Brains and Brawn. Mm-hmm. Guts is very much a Brawn one. It is purely a physical one. There's really no smarts.
Guts.
Yeah, there's no smarts. Actually, yeah, there's Brains, Brawns, and Guts.
Carmen Sandiego, definitely more Brains, would you say?
Almost all Brains, I would say. Something like a Jeopardy is definitely Brains. I think with Nickelodeon, you saw more more mixes because it was fun to watch, you know, silly challenges.
Yeah, I remember when we watched that stuff, I had this weird kind of deja vu where I was like so certain that I was on one of these shows, whether it was as a contestant or in the audience. But then you reminded me that I'd never been to Florida.
So yeah, so the
odds. It was probably some kind of weird dream that I had.
Yeah, the odds drastic go down if you haven't been in Florida, I think.
Yeah, I have like childhood memories that I'm like almost certain are dreams. Like my mom and I got ran over by a car in the bank parking lot.
I think this should be told around the dinner table when I'm at the in-laws place if you got ran over by a car with your mom.
Well, it probably was a dream, but ever since I had that dream, I knew the importance of holding hands with my mom when I crossed the street.
Well, good. So dreams can teach you things about yourself, about the world.
And now whenever I cross the street, I have to wait for my mom to bus into the city so I could hold her hand, and she'll lead me to safety across the street.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you learned something from it. That's good.
Anyway.
We mentioned GLOW earlier, so this is season 3 of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Mm-hmm. For those that are not familiar, which I'd be surprised if you're listening to a podcast about the third season of the show without knowing where it came from.
Well, I'm sure some people just like to listen to us.
That could be true. Yeah, maybe your mother listens. Your mother said she liked the Evangelion episodes, which is amazing.
2 hour long Evangelion.
Does she prefer the series end, or does she like the movie?
She's actually really into the birth rebirth stuff.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, wow. Okay, gotcha. That's more of a flavor. Yeah, I'll have to ask her about that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yes, this is very different than Evangelion. So this is based on the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, which, for those that don't know, was a real-world wrestling promotion in the 80s. Very different from what you may know of, like, WWE or WCW. Mm-hmm. It was intentionally campy, even more so than, like, wrestling, because wrestling has always been campy. It was more of a variety show, but there was actual, like, there was wrestling involved, too.
So the amount of wrestling that's depicted in the GLOW series is kind of accurate compared to what really happened?
I think the first season of GLOW, mm-hmm. the Netflix show, I think that definitely skewed a little closer to what it was, what it was like in the real world. Because the first season was very much like, hey, we're putting this thing together, and it's like, oh, we're bringing a bunch of actresses in, and they don't know what wrestling is, so mm-hmm. it's a lot of like explaining like wrestling terms and stuff. And I think the show has always been very good about being accurate about, you know, they brought in Chavo Guerrero and a bunch of real world wrestlers and everything. Like Chavo was involved with the training. A lot of it was shot at his gym and everything. So it is very true to wrestling. And I always appreciated that about the show because pro wrestling's depiction in mainstream culture is historically just written by people who clearly have not seen pro wrestling or know anything about the industry. So
yeah, that first season was definitely like an onboarding for the whole cast, except for like two, like I think Carmen, was she experienced in wrestling or
well,
her family?
Carmen,
she has a family of wrestlers in the show.
The character, the character of Carmen. I think they had Brodus Clay and Carlito as her brothers. And so she's definitely the one, even through this season, where she's the one bringing up Bobby the Brain Heenan mm-hmm. and you know, Captain Lou Albano. Well, everyone else is still kind of like, I don't know, we do this weird show in Vegas.
Yeah. And then in real life, the actress who plays Welfare Queen
mm-hmm.
is Awesome Kong.
Awesome Kong in AEW.
Yes.
Yes, yes, she is great.
Yeah,
she's awesome.
She did a great job when I saw her. I was really intimidated and scared by her.
She is. She's awesome. She is really, I didn't mean to make a pun there, but no, she is great. And I'm really impressed because if she has done other acting before in, you know, little bit parts, whatever, here and there in indie movies, I'm not aware of it. Mm-hmm. And so as far as I know, this is the only time I've seen Awesome Kong act mm-hmm. traditionally. And she's really good.
She is really good.
She's fantastic. She doesn't have a whole lot to do this season, which, by the way, we're not going to go chronologically. There's 10 episodes here. We're covering the whole season. So we'll just kind of talk about the characters and their arcs and what we liked mm-hmm. and didn't like. So not going to be a episode by episode breakdown here. So Welfare Queen, I think it was last season, season 2, where she had that interesting arc where her son watched her wrestle and was really put off and upset about the caricature right. of Welfare Queen. And I remember thinking that was a really good subplot there. Here, she's pretty much just like, I am glad that they kind of touch on wrestlers' bodies breaking down mm-hmm. from bumping and everything. And that's her thing here, is that her back is in really bad shape.
Right.
So, yeah, she kind of touches on, you know, like pain pills and stuff. Like Carmen is kind of explaining how wrestlers mm-hmm. break down, and she talks about managers being a viable like side thing for her to do, and that's why she brings up Bobby the Brain. And,
yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. They don't really follow it too far. They mention how she could do that, and she seems pretty, you know, up for the idea. But that doesn't really, like, continue. But, you know,
it certainly
seems like there will be another season.
Totally. Yeah, I think this season, compared to the previous seasons, had a lot less in-ring stuff. It was the wrestling was essentially just the reason why they were all in Vegas and living in this hotel together, but it really wasn't a focus of the show.
Yeah, it is set, I guess, with the wrestling world as the backdrop in a way, but mm-hmm. it's just barely, it's kind of an afterthought. I think they've done it well because the backdrop and the wrestling theme is what got me to be interested in giving this show a shot when mm-hmm. it first debuted a few years ago. And, you know, at this point, I'm invested in the characters. I like the show and the writing and everything. So, like, it's not like it's the wrestling thing was the thing that kept me watching the show. Now right. I just like the characters and the you know, the story.
Totally.
So, not a big deal, but, like, outside of, there's one episode kind of in the middle of the season where they all kind of swap gimmicks, mm-hmm. and that's some fun stuff where it's like, oh, Liberty Bell is playing Zoya and, you know, vice versa,
yeah,
stuff like that.
I guess by virtue of the fact that it is a Vegas show now, they're kind of doing the same performance every day. I mean, the same plot line and everything, so they kind of, like they say, I think Debbie says it, they're on autopilot, like, throughout most of the season as far as the wrestling show is concerned, so they're able to just kind of seamlessly switch gimmicks with each other, and the result is pretty funny.
Yeah, which I guess that also makes sense why they're not doing a lot of wrestling stuff here, because they did do a bunch of the ongoing storylines in the previous seasons where it's like, oh, now it's, you know, Ruth and Debbie are feuding mm-hmm. and all this stuff, and so yeah, this is basically just like, hey, we're doing the same show for a casino, like an off-strip casino every single night.
Right.
Which, by the way, so the Vegas setting, I think, is cool. I think that was an interesting change of pace here. And they're all living in a casino, basically. But Gina Davis making a, not a cameo, she's a
full-blown character.
Yeah. She doesn't have a whole lot to do. She shows up in a handful of episodes, but I thought she was great. I have not seen Gina Davis in anything in a while. But she's like the owner of the casino, or she's in charge of like
she's
the entertainment showgirl part of it.
I think she's like she's the one who controls the casino.
Yeah. And her name, Sandy Devereaux St. Clair.
Yeah, it's a very fancy name.
That is a great name, and she just seems to be having a good time with that character. It's glad to see her there. I did like the way the season started. I thought it was really interesting, you know, considering the era that it starts with them watching the Challenger explosion.
Right.
While they're, like, doing a promo thing for the show.
Yeah, and Zoya the Destroyer is in, like, full-blown heel promo, like, not paying attention to what's happening on screen while she's cutting this promo about how, like, stupid, you know, America is for, you know, trying to go out on this adventure and there's a school teacher and how dumb is that?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone obviously dies in the Challenger.
Yes.
And it's happening, and that kind of really rocks her for a little while.
Yeah, and Liberty Bell is, like, watching it on the TV happen while Zoya is, like, completely oblivious. Like, thought that was a really solid opening to the season.
Yeah, that's funny.
I went to Krista McAuliffe Elementary School for half a semester.
Is that the name of the teacher that...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was she from Kansas or something?
You know, I'm not sure, but when I left Catholic school, it was in the middle of the fifth grade, and mm-hmm. so I went to Chris McCullough for half a year before moving.
I imagine it was named in memorial to her.
Oh, yeah. This would have been like 95 or something like that.
Yeah,
so she was long dead.
That Challenger thing, I mean, gee whiz.
Well, and it just seems like that was definitely back in the day when, like, space travel and shuttle launches were something where it's like, hey, let's wheel out the TV and, like, all the classrooms are watching. That's why, like, everybody of a certain age remembers where they were at when the Challenger exploded, because, like, everyone was watching that. It was a big deal. So, and I thought it was interesting that it touched on kind of, like, do we put on a show after this thing? Because that is something that has happened in wrestling, you know, after 9/11. You know, SmackDown was one of the first big live events to come back, you know, right alongside, like, you know, Letterman and a bunch of these other shows. When Owen died, when Owen fell, you know, obviously lots of controversy about them continuing the show. So, you know, not a huge plot point, just part of one episode. But I don't know, as a wrestling fan, it was interesting to see that kind of does the show go on type thing. They address that, which they do wind up doing the show. But I'm looking at some of the other side plots here that go on, and so we got, okay, so Machu Picchu, not a whole lot to do. She, there's not really like an arc for her. She's just kind of around. She pops up a little bit at the end in the Christmas episode.
Carmen,
yeah.
She kind of has a little bit of an arc in that, like, she's kind of lamenting the fact that she doesn't have any romantic partners.
Yeah.
You know, people tend to, like, when they're having, when their roommate is getting it on with someone else, they tend to just stay with her because they know that she'll always have, you know, somewhere. She will never have a partner there with her. So yeah, it's sad, but she's also considering, well, she ends up actually going to Arizona to wrestle with her brother.
Yeah, I think that was, like, she didn't get a whole lot of screen time to demonstrate this, but I think they got it across that, like, hey, she's a wrestler, and mm-hmm. she wants to wrestle. She comes from a family of wrestlers. She's not really content with this, like, living in a casino, doing the same thing. Like, right. It's not creatively fulfilling at all mm-hmm. for her. So, a very small part of the season, but, yeah, some did right by the character, I think.
How fun would it be to live in a hotel for, like, a month? Like a nice hotel.
It would have to be pretty nice. It would have to be like one of those suites or something where it's like you really feel like you have room and, you know, I want to have my game consoles and stuff there. If we could make it comfortable, I think, like our suite that we got with our wedding in Vegas. Although that is
I wouldn't need that big a suite.
That one was nuts.
As long as it had like a kitchenette, like with a microwave. Maybe,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially if you have like unlimited access to like the buffet. You don't have to worry about food and yeah. you don't have to worry about cleaning because there's housekeepers.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it'd be very luxurious.
I remember spending a week in a hotel once when I was 18 and it was so much fun because it was when I got flown to Minneapolis to shoot that Game Informer commercial. Mm-hmm. And me and my cameraman, my friend Quo, we went up there and they gave us like a GameStop corporate credit card to buy our food and stuff throughout the week. Mm-hmm. And we were 18. We couldn't drink or anything.
Just buy a bunch of bagel bites.
Yeah, no, honestly, we went to Target. There's that Target downtown in Minneapolis and we just bought tons and tons of microwave food and stuff. But they like set us up in this nice, like we each had these two big hotel rooms with like ovens and kitchens and everything. So we got mm-hmm. all these pizzas and everything. We brought our PlayStations and we brought Final Fantasy VII, I remember. So we were just sitting there and I had never played through VII. So we would just, you know, play all night and make pizzas and stuff like that. And we had this big hotel room. We were 18. This is before we had gone to the dorms, I think. So wow. We never like lived on our own. It mm-hmm. was such a fun like adventure for a week.
That does
sound fun. Yeah, I love that. Really good memories. Other stuff. We got Sheila, the wolf girl.
Yes.
Formerly known as, well, she was never known as the wolf girl, but you know who I'm talking about if I say the wolf girl.
Yeah, she's dressed like a wolf.
Yep, she's the wolf girl. She
looks more like a cave woman to me. If I just saw her, I would think cave woman before a wolf.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, definitely.
But she's definitely going for the wolf thing, which as a human being, how close can you really get to resembling a wolf? So I guess with that in mind, she does a decent job.
Yeah, without going full, like, humanimal or whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't wear fake ears or anything.
No. Or I don't even think she has a tail. She just has, like, a weird fuzzy, like, pelt around her.
Yeah, and
like,
this
a
wig.
Hat. Yeah, the wig. And so, I don't know, she did have a little bit of some time in, like, the camping episode. There's one where they all just kind of get out of Vegas and they go set up, you know, tents and stuff like that and sit around the fire and share stories. And she goes camping with, like, the bigger girl, like, the Viking girl. Mm-hmm. And she at some point like it's dehydrated and sees a wolf on the mountain and has like an epiphany that she doesn't need the wolf stuff anymore. And she throws it in the fire and going forward in the season, she's like blonde and, you know, like I can't remember like what's was it the one where she dressed up like Liza Minnelli? Is that what got her thinking about how she doesn't like need the wolf stuff?
Well, the Liza Minnelli thing was after the wolf thing, after the shedding of the wolf stuff.
That was, okay.
So the first thing that got her thinking about it was she went to that acting class.
Oh, right, with Welfare Queen.
Yeah, and she was, you know, trying her best to give a good read from her book in front of the class, and the teacher was obviously distracted by her clothing because it's very attention-grabbing.
Right.
And you know, then she has that, she has like a talk with Bobby Bond, who's like the drag queen at the hotel. And he essentially encourages her to like, you know, stop. Well, he kind of relates to her and says that like, you know, when I put on these clothes, I'm someone. And when mm-hmm. I take them away, it's like, so he also got her thinking about like, who am I beyond the outfit? You know, she's always hiding behind this outfit. And then she has that kind of hallucination. I assume it's a hallucination on the camping trip where the wolf kind of goes its separate way. And, you know, and then I think she decides at that point that she wants to shed that and throws in the fire. And then she comes out at the next show as Liza Minnelli.
Okay. That's right. That was like her big, like coming out mm-hmm. party, like the new, like, I don't need the wolf stuff.
Yeah. So she goes from wolf lady to like just a really good actress lady.
Right. And by the end, she's just like, you know, wearing very plain clothes, blonde hair, and she gives this big performance at the end that everyone likes. She's kind of like coming into her own by the end of the mm-hmm. season here. But you mentioned Bobby, and I actually thought, as far as like new things the series introduced this season, I thought he was kind of a crux, is that, am I using that word right? Like, he was a focal point that, like, some of the bigger, more interesting arcs kind of sprang from.
Yeah, he was tied up in a lot of stuff. It was interesting.
Yeah, he was great, especially in the back half of the season. Like, they first introduce him because I think he's doing the Barbra Streisand drag show, right, mm-hmm. where he's singing as Barbra. And he, I think one of the first big things with him is he kind of has this intuition about Bash being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And he says something to him about, like, oh, yeah, you know, my wife didn't like this either, or whatever, like, kind of sarcastically, like, oh, yeah, our wives, you know.
Right. Well, Bash mentions his wife, who is Rhonda.
Right.
And because Rhonda and him, in the end of the previous season, got, like, married for, like, a green card so she could get her green card.
Right.
So it was a marriage built from the get-go, like, not necessarily in love, but over time they kind of developed feelings for each other. At least Rhonda did for him.
Yeah, and Rhonda, like, wanted to have sex and things like that and was trying to keep him interested. And, like, clearly something was not going right here.
Right.
And I think it was Bobby, was basically Bobby bringing that up with Bash that kind of started the whole thing of Bash getting really, like, kind of defensive and
asshole-y.
Yeah,
maybe it just brought to his attention that people can tell, you know, that he, or he's just, you know, it just stirred up that conflict within him. Like, because if, you know, no one's paying attention, no one notices or says anything, then he could keep up the facade of, like, you know, the attractive wife, he has all this money, whatever. He doesn't have to give into that stuff. But then if he starts thinking about it, obviously, if he's gay, you know, that it's probably really hard to live as a straight person if you're gay. I can't imagine how hard it must be. So he has that conflict stirring up. And that's why so he's kind of buying up or paying, investing in all these different acts in the casino. And Bobby sees that and he wants to get in on it naturally. And he's actually a really good performer. And after that weird, awkward moment where, like, Bobby's like, oh, yeah, my wife, too, like, sarcastically.
Yeah.
Bash pretty much just writes him off. And Bobby gives this amazing performance as Liza Minnelli. And Bash is like, nope, sorry, not interested. So he's obviously resentful, but also feels like he has to compensate because not long after that, like, he has that big blowout with the whole cast where he's like, we're signing on for another year. That's that. No conversation. And he, like, completely blindsides Debbie, who's also a producer in the show, and just, like, you know, essentially nullifying her role. And so he's definitely trying to compensate and trying to assert his, I don't know, masculinity, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's just such a harsh turn from him being just kind of, like, oblivious, fun-loving, you know, guy that wants to put on a show or whatever, right. Like, you know, rich kid or whatever. Like, all of a sudden, he's being a aggressive asshole for sure. And it's interesting because, like, I don't even remember in previous seasons if – I think they hinted at him being gay. They definitely had, like, kind of overtly, you know, talked about him and was it somebody that worked for the family or something?
It was some kind of – not a – butler, but there's some kind of assistant that he had.
Yeah, like a close friend of the family that had been there for decades or something like that. But, like, it's not even clear that, like, Bash knows that he's gay necessarily throughout what we've seen so far until a little later on here. But it makes sense that, like, he's this spoiled kid that's, like, not very well developed emotionally. And so he's just not handling it at all when he actually has some sort of, like, internal struggle and, like, dealing with his actual emotions and things like that. And so he just lashes out all over the place. And poor Rhonda's just trying to figure out how to, like, whoa, what do I do here? Do I just need to wear lingerie? Do I need to find some way to get this guy interested?
And in the midst of all that, his mom comes to visit.
Oh, my God. The actress looked familiar. I don't know who it is, but she played that, like, upper class, like, rich, just really snooty, shitty mother so well, I thought.
I agree she played really well, but I don't think she was necessarily... I think she was kind of justified in her behavior because from her perspective, she probably has an intuition as well that her son is gay. And she obviously knows that they have an enormous amount of money. So for this girl to marry her son, who she thinks is gay, it's from her perspective, probably just like a money grab. But the reality is it was a green card grab.
Do you think that's why she was doing the stuff where it's like, do you want this super expensive thing or the same thing for cheaper?
Yeah.
Do you think she was trying to kind of gauge if she was just like going after the money?
Yeah.
Interesting, because the way I read that when that scene happened was I thought she was being like, oh, you need the expensive one. Don't say you'll take the cheap one. I thought she was like being like fashion, you know, super upper, like, oh, you can't be seen in this. But actually now that you mention it, like, it does make sense that she's trying to make sure she's not just trying to, like, take the family's money.
Right, right.
Which, at some point, they do get, like, $40 million.
Yeah, so once, you know, she realizes that her son is married to Rhonda, that, like, unlocks the other part of his trust, I guess. So he essentially gets all the – instead of getting a monthly allowance from his trust, he just gets the whole shebang, which is $40 million. Which I think in, like, late 80s money is, like, a crazy amount of money.
That's
insane. I mean, it's a crazy amount of money now, but, like...
Oh, in the 80s, yeah, that'd be nuts.
It'd be essentially like having an unlimited amount of money.
Yeah.
I feel like even now it would be like having
40 million. Yeah, you invest, you know, most of that and you are going to be totally fine.
I would pocket a cool million for myself.
Yeah.
And then invest, you know,
invest like 20 million at least, like right away. Yeah. And do some research for sure.
My dream is to secretly, if I ever come upon an enormous amount of wealth, to secretly pay off my brother's mortgage.
Well, don't secretly try to keep it a secret. Don't let
buy the house that my other brother's renting.
Yeah.
And buy my parents a big vacation house or something like that.
Oh, nice.
That's what I would do.
I'll secretly arrange for somebody to come in and fix my dad's downstairs toilet he doesn't have to go
secretly
upstairs.
Secretly clean
to
his shower upstairs.
Oh, boy. He would have a... I think he actually, at some point, he did get that upstairs one cleaned. I'm not sure. But yes. So the Bash thing never gets like fully resolved by the end of the season. Like he never like comes to terms necessarily with everything and is okay with everything. Like, so there's the big kind of turning point for like Rhonda and the marriage and stuff is that she wants to hire a hooker, male prostitute who is sleeping with, what's that girl's name? I forget.
Melanie.
Yeah, he's Melrose. Sleeping with Melrose, right. And so they arrange it so like, oh, come up here, act like you're a handyman or whatever, and then flirt with me, and hopefully that'll get Bash jealous, and then we'll have like hot sex or whatever.
Right, because previously when she was like out in public and some guy flirted with her, Bash got really protective and like started making out with her. And I think she perceived that as like, oh, Bash is turned on by this. But the reality is Bash probably just wanted to seem straight, you know, he just
probably like, oh, this is like what the macho
dominance and you know,
because
you know
it, it was in front of a bunch of people too. Yeah. It was like this loading garage type area. Right. Whereas when they do the hooker thing, it's up in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And he, when he first comes in and like they're sitting on the couch drinking together and stuff, he's kind of like, hey, how's it going? No, I don't have a problem. Do you want me to top you off? We're good here. And then he's just like, real quick, moves into like, she's pretty, right? Do you want to kiss her?
Yeah.
Do you want to do some business here? And they go to the bed and they start messing around.
They have a threesome.
Yeah. And it's just very, very clear that Bash is into the dude. And Bash does the thing again the next morning where he gets like super duper defensive and weird and thinks the guy was actually a handyman and tells Gina Davis, like, you got to fire that guy immediately. And so, again, he's not dealing with it well at all. And like the last episode, he's kind of just having a breakdown about it, like fetal position, like talking to Debbie, right?
Debbie.
Liberty Bell?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Talking to her about, like, what do I do? So things have happened for sure, but he is still in a, like, precarious transitional spot at this point.
Right.
But I really thought that Bash's whole arc was one of the highlights, I think. Like, all the stuff around Bobby, the drag queen, and they put on, like, an AIDS benefit that, like, there's this hate crime where a bunch of people spray anti-gay slurs and stuff. This is, like, the height of the AIDS scare, so lots of AIDS graffiti, and they try to set this place on fire while they're in it. I thought that was some of the better stuff, was the stuff surrounding Bobby.
Because I feel like the other, you know, the other drama of the show is kind of siloed into just, like, what is tangentially related to the GLOW series. But, like, Bash obviously is related to GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, because he's the main dude investing in it. But he is also greatly influenced by, like, what is happening in the world at that time, like, how gay people are treated, what's going on with the AIDS stuff, you know, prejudice, and, like, just having to come to terms with the fact that you might be gay, like, all that kind of internal conflict that I think was, I mean, it was touched on in other ways, not specifically the gay stuff, but just, like, you know, the state of society at that time, like, when Debbie was at dinner with her boyfriend and his coworkers or his, potential clients. I don't really know what the situation was.
Right.
You know, she's just told to like just sit and look pretty and make people laugh, whatever. So you kind of get like a sense of, you know, how things were. But I think with Bash especially, it gets into that. And it's really interesting because one of the most appealing parts of the show for me as someone who didn't experience any of the 80s is what a time capsule it is for like, because that's something I never experienced, you know. Some, like, maybe the early 90s was very similar to the 80s, but I was a kid in the early 90s, you know.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think they touch on a lot of that more in this season than in previous seasons, which I thought was really cool because, like, the original GLOW and just wrestling in general in the 80s was just so filled with stereotypes, you know, specifically, you know, racial stereotypes.
Sure.
And it's always like, here's Hulk Hogan defeating, you know, the evil Russians or the evil Iranians and stuff like that. Like, that was wrestling back then. And a lot of pop culture, honestly. Tons of movies and everything were just very broad stroke stereotypes. And GLOW specifically. And so for this show that is based on GLOW to kind of like, you know, specifically the camping episode when they're all just kind of sitting around mm-hmm. and talking about their past and everything. And, you know, she dressed up like a fortune cookie. Is her wrestling name Fortune Cookie?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. When she's talking about like her family, like basically surviving a genocide and coming to America and everything. Like, I thought they touched on all that stuff in an interesting way, mm-hmm. considering like, you know, you have to wonder how those women in the 80s actually felt about portraying these, like, insanely broad stereotypes.
Sure.
So, yeah, I thought the show did a really good job with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, other big stories here. Debbie is, I think Debbie's kind of, if I had to pick a favorite character and performance probably of the season, I thought Debbie, Liberty Bell, her character is going in a really interesting direction, I think.
Yeah, like, stuff really happens with Debbie. Like, mm-hmm. she really is kind of a take-charge person, and I forget the name of the actress, but she does...
Betty Gilpin, I think?
Okay, yeah, that sounds familiar. Her performance is, like, she's such a good actress. But, like, stuff actually happens for Debbie. I mean, stuff with Ruth, Allison Brie... I mean, it kind of starts and stops. Like, nothing really happens with her. It's kind of just relationship stuff.
She feels like a side character. Outside of, we'll get to what's going on with her and Sam here in a bit. But it does seem like Betty is more the central focus of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And it's Debbie. Just kind of a bummer because, you know, Ruth is, I don't agree with a lot of what Ruth does. She makes really poor choices at some points. But, you know, she's not someone that I wouldn't respect. I mean, she's... You know, she seems really kind and she means well, I think, for the most part. And it's just a bummer that things just one after another don't work out for her. I mean, her long distance boyfriend, things aren't going well there. Sorry, Razor sneezing. You know, it's kind of like I said earlier, autopilot with the show. Her acting career is stagnant. She mm-hmm. gets offered to come read for the role in a movie that Sam's daughter wrote the screenplay for. And she goes down there thinking it's a lock, but she ends up not getting it. So things aren't really working out for her. And there was really no high point for her at any point in the season, right, would you say?
There were times where it seemed like she was having fun with the show, mm-hmm. like, you know, the last episode of the Christmas one, mm-hmm. and when she got to play Liberty Bell. Or did she play Liberty Bell? I know that... Debbie played.
Yeah, she played. Remember, she had the ponytail.
The pigtails.
The pigtails.
Yeah, yeah, like there were times she seemed to be having fun, mm-hmm. which Allison Brie does such a great job of playing that, like, earnest goofball, you mm-hmm. know? Like when she's trying to cheer up Debbie and she takes her top off and is wearing the big showgirl thing and everything. Like, she's just being a total goof. And yeah, it is kind of a bummer for her this season because, like, even at the end, at the end of the season, like one of the last scenes, she's just so unclear about what she wants to do because she's like, man, it's never happened for me. Mm-hmm. Like, stuff is happening for Debbie at this point. She's moving down this producer route that is going really well for her mm-hmm. and everything, and she's really good at it, mm-hmm. it seems. And Ruth just doesn't seem to know what she wants to do, personal life or professional life.
She just seems like she can't come to terms with the fact that her acting career isn't going to go anywhere. Like Debbie said at the end of the last episode, that if she was going to be a big successful actor, it would have happened already. Because at this point, I guess Ruth is probably, the character is probably in her mid-30s, I would say. Early to mid-30s.
I remember in the camping one, I remember Debbie said that she was 28, and I think they were presented as like similar ages.
Okay. Yeah, so Debbie's arc, just to get into that a little more, she is kind of at a impasse because she's in Vegas, obviously performing, but she has a son in LA. And, you know, it's I imagine, especially hard for a mom to be away from her infant son. And she feels a lot of guilt about it. The flight attendant makes her feel guilty. She has a bunch of guilt that she's missing out on, like, his first steps and him talking and everything. And her ex-husband is, like, showing her videos and stuff. And it's, you know, you feel bad for her, but eventually she ends up just bringing her kid to Vegas with her.
She does, but, like, that doesn't really go anywhere. You get a couple, like, oh, wacky kid on the loose things where it's like, oh, kid in a casino, he got in the elevator.
It's, like one episode worth of
addressed. And then, like, the kid's just not really shown for, like, most of the last couple episodes. So it's like, wait, is he back? We don't really see much of the husband, the ex-husband or anything.
Yeah.
So I didn't think, I don't know, the kid stuff didn't really hit for me this season.
And it also, like, earlier on kind of flirts with her potentially dipping her toes into some kind of eating disorder kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought that because they end an episode on that with her kind of sitting there and vomiting in the toilet and then like looking pleased with herself in the mirror. And I thought that was going to go in that direction with that character. And they just don't ever really follow up on that at all.
Yeah, which is, as someone who the greatest trauma of my life has been my repeated bouts with eating disorders, specifically anorexia. It's always disappointing when eating disorders are just portrayed as like just a one-off thing that someone can have in addition to living a life, because the reality is it replaces your life.
Yeah.
It's like any addiction, I mean. But so it's just strange that she would be so gung-ho, like, you know, especially in a show where, I mean, let's face it, in a show, anything a character does, unlike real life, kind of has weight behind it because, you know, there's a limited amount of episodes and everything, and it's scripted.
Yeah.
And, you know, for her to be so like, okay, I'm not going to eat, I'm going to run up and down the stairs, I'm going to throw up the food, you know, binge and purge, whatever. And then for it to not really be addressed, it's just, I don't know, it's disappointing. But again, if this show was going to realistically depict an eating disorder, then she would not have any story arc at all. You know what I mean? I get it. But, you know, I was curious to see what they were going to do with that.
Yeah, I was too. I was really curious when they started that because my first thought was like, uh-oh, you know, like many things, I think when you see certain disorders or subject matters portrayed in Hollywood, they just kind of really like don't get the nuance right at all. And, you know, I didn't know much about eating disorders at all when I met you. And when I found out that you had really, really struggled with that, I remember I've talked to you so much about it. You know, I read Portia de Rossi's book on your recommendation, and I started understanding a lot more, obviously not as much as you do, but like about the how complex it is. And it's not as simple as like a lot of people just think like, oh, just eat a cheeseburger, you're fine.
Right.
And so I was worried that like, okay, if the show's going to do this, I wonder if they're going to show the nuance and they're going to handle this right. But they don't even like really go beyond that one thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying like people can throw up what they eat and not – that doesn't mean you have an eating disorder. People can skip eating for a day because Fraser keeps sneezing. Because they don't feel good about themselves. That doesn't – you can, you know, go on a really strict diet for a week. That doesn't mean you have an eating disorder. But when it's in a show like this and it's kind of the focus of this episode, you would think they would go deeper into it. But they didn't really, so.
No, they don't. They kind of shift Debbie's story pretty quickly.
Into Fraser,
Fraser, buddy, what is going on over there? Chill out. We see some stuff where she's sleeping around for a while. She's kind of living up the Vegas stuff or whatever. But then she meets this guy on a plane, Tex.
Yes, who is the dude who played the Wiz in that Seinfeld episode.
Is the Wiz on Seinfeld?
He's the Wiz and nobody beats him.
Is he a card player?
No, essentially Elaine sees him and like is immediately like awestruck by him and like infatuated by him, like love at first sight kind of thing. And when she first locks eyes with him, like the whole world is in slow motion. She's like just transfixed with him. She feels like she's... it's like meant to be. And then she realizes she recognizes him from somewhere. And then she's like at Jerry's apartment and the Wiz commercial comes on and he's the Wiz. He plays. Do you remember, did you have the Wiz in Kansas? The
No.
Wiz was like I think it was like mainly like a PC Richard and Son kind of store.
Okay.
But it used to be around. But yeah, he played the Wiz. So he wore a big crown. And
did he play that on the actual commercials?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So it's just based on the real commercials.
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember there being an actual, like the guy who played the Wiz. I don't remember that.
Okay.
In real life, but I remember the store.
So is this dude like a dreamboat or something? Because it's like, if there's a whole arc about like Elaine being infatuated with him and then like a Debbie being like super into him or whatever, is this dude like just this super hunk?
Well,
or?
What's weird is that Debbie is like, in real life, Debbie's in her early 30s. In the show, she's supposed to be in her early 30s, late 20s, whatever. But this guy, I mean, when he was with Elaine, like Elaine was in her early 30s when they were. So I don't know. I guess maybe he has like a rugged masculinity about him.
He does have bolo ties. Bolo ties.
I mean, he's a handsome guy. He just is kind of that, like, not the traditional dreamboat guy, I guess. But, you know, he's a handsome guy.
Okay.
I think maybe it's more his personality and glow that does Debbie in. So.
The confident, kind of like Southern businessman type thing. Yeah, so he's basically like in Vegas schmoozing with a bunch of executives and stuff, trying to buy like media companies and stuff like that. He's very, very rich. Debbie kind of gets with him for a little bit. He's got a ranch and horses and stuff like that. And Debbie pretty quickly gets kind of into the idea of that life until she realizes that he is just, like you said earlier, like using her to sit around and be pretty and like not actually be like a partner in the business. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of turns south on that relationship idea.
You know what I noticed though? There's like a huge time jump in between like the middle of the season where it like jumps forward 6 months.
Yeah.
Because when Ruth is on the ranch with Debbie,
yeah.
like Ruth says like, oh, you've been with him for 6 months or whatever. So, and we like have them, we see them on their first date, not too long before that. So.
You know what? I want to bring that up a little later because I do want to bring up how like the last episode is this Christmas thing. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, wait, what? It's Christmas? Mm-hmm. Like, granted, it's the desert, so it's not like it's going to be snowy. But like, I didn't get any sense of like what time in the year any of this stuff was. I don't think it was very great about like figuring out. Right. Like, you can timestamp some stuff like the Challenger and sure. things like that. But,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The other big arc, I would say, in the season is Sam, Marc Maron's character, mm-hmm. the director. And he pretty early in the season kind of gets distanced from the actual GLOW operation and is trying to get into, well, is he trying to get into movies at the beginning? Or is that once he meets up with Justine again? Is Justine the spark that gets him back into like, hey, I want to go back into like...
Well, he's been writing a screenplay because he doesn't have much to do with the show. But he's writing a screenplay and him and Ruth kind of bond. But he still won't let Ruth read it, but he lets Ruth read his daughter Justine's screenplay and he thinks it's good and he just wanted confirmation that it's actually good. But he, because he doesn't have much to do, ends up going back to LA to try to pitch Justine's screenplay to different production companies, I guess.
Right, and that's the thing that they have Ruth read for and she doesn't get the role.
Right.
You know, I thought they were going to do something a little more interesting early on in the season with him because, like, he has this great, great day with Ruth. And obviously him and Ruth go way back. It's a complicated relationship at times, but it seems friendly. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, they're gambling. He teaches her how to play blackjack. They're in the hot tub. They just have this great day, steak dinner and all this stuff. And then they're sitting in the hot tub, just kind of relaxing after this great day. And he just, like, professes his love, basically. Like, come on, you gotta know I'm in love with you, obviously. And the way she plays it initially is just like, whoa, man, you just made this really fun day weird. Like, mm-hmm. And I thought they were going to touch on something you don't see a lot in shows or that I haven't seen a lot, which is the thing where it's like, you know, like guys and girls just being friends, but then like one half that equation, usually the dude being like, what? We get along so well. Why won't you date me? Like, mm-hmm. You know, like we got to be more than friends. And then the girl being like, no, we just want to be friends. Like, you don't see that a lot, but right. I feel like that happens in real life quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were going to go that route with it, with Alison Brie just being like, no, man, I just want to be friends with you. Can't we just do that and you not get weird?
Yeah, that's the best thing about... Well, not the best thing. It's far from the best thing. But one of the many great things that's about being married is that I never have to worry about that anymore. Oh. It's like, I'm married.
It's so great.
Yeah, it's like no one's going to have any ideas. I could be friends with people and not have to worry about it getting weird or anything.
Just not having to worry about, like, dating or anything like that and just, like, not...
Well, I'm talking specifically about that, like, one... Because that's happened
to me in the past. The social stuff where it's just like, yeah, you got the ring. You know, people know the deal. It's just like, nope, married. Yeah. That's cool. So... Being married is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the best thing in the world. Being married to you is, I think a lot of people have bad things to say about marriage.
Oh, but, yeah, tons.
I mean, granted, we've only been married for like two years.
A little over 2 years, yeah.
We've been together for a while now. I don't know.
Been together almost five.
Being married to you is great.
Well, being married to you is great.
Well, thank you.
Yes. So at a certain point here, during the whole like Sam and his daughter Justine thing, he has a heart attack while mm-hmm. she is kind of like pitching the script to some producers. And he kind of no-sells it around her. He doesn't want her to get worried. And she's just like, you're being weird. What the hell's going on? He's like, I love you. Please, you know, just... think good thoughts about me if I die, basically. That doesn't really go anywhere except for it kind of gets him thinking about his mortality, mm-hmm. I think, and it makes him adopt her legally. So if he does die suddenly because, you know, smoking and drinking and not exercising and everything, that she will inherit everything. And she always, you know, she grew up being a big fan of his movies and everything, so she would get all that memorabilia and whatever money he's got and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So not a huge part of the season, I wouldn't say by any means, but... Yeah.
I think the catalyst for a lot of Ruth's longing and loneliness, because after that camping trip, he is just gone. That's when he goes to LA and he doesn't say goodbye or anything. So they're separated from each other for a really long time until she then goes down to LA to try out down over west.
West of Las Vegas.
To try out for the part, and that's when she confesses that she's in love with him, mm-hmm. and they violently make out.
Yeah,
before he tells her that, like, oh, you didn't get the part, and then she's like, ah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that gets all weird for sure, yeah. And she leaves Wolf Girl high and dry for the performance mm-hmm. at the AIDS benefit. So yeah, Ruth, not having the best season, really, no. Just going through a lot of turmoil.
I hope things work out for her in the next season.
I do too. That's pretty much it for most of the main plot. So you get a little bit about Cherry Bang. She doesn't want to be pregnant and have to stop working and everything. And her husband's like super duper, wants to have a kid. And mm-hmm. they kind of break up. But then there's a big get-together thing at the end. Not a lot of screen time dedicated right. to this. But speaking of the Christmas thing, like, yeah, that is one thing I wanted to say, is that the last episode of 10 is this like Christmas special, which it just felt like, I mean, they do advance some of the like sub stories within mm-hmm. there, the stuff with Bash and some of the stuff with Debbie and everything, mm-hmm. and you know, Cherry Bang and the kid stuff. Mm-hmm. They decide they could look into adopting if they want to go that route. But overall, it's just like, I remember before we hit play on the episode, it was called like, oh, a glow Christmas yeah. or something. I was like, wait, what? Like, they haven't said the
it's
word
like the
Christmas.
One-off Christmas albums that like boy bands used to put out. It's yeah. Like, not a real band. Right. Or not right. a real album.
But it's weird because like, that's fine because it just shows up near Christmas time. But like, it's yeah. weird at the end of a season that was not mentioning or leading to Christmas at all. And then it's like, oh, I wasn't expecting this at all.
Yeah. Not to mention their production of Christmas Carol was like, I think the most unrealistic depiction of a wrestling show that they've done in the series so far.
Yeah, for 90% of it, the wrestling ring is just in the background. Like, there's some wrestling moves that happen at the very end.
Yeah, and they, like, I think this was a last-minute thing, but they have all these really elaborate props and outfits and, you know, scenery and stuff like that, and, like, special effects and sound effects. It's like...
It's just a play yeah, at that point. Play, yeah. Which I did wonder, because, like, I know, you know, a lot of the main girls have done some wrestling training for the show, like, with Chavo, but that moonsault, I'm pretty sure, was not Alison Brie. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I wonder if they brought in, like, Io Shirai or something, somebody to do, like, this picture-perfect moonsault.
Yeah. But, so I'm wondering... If Ruth is, I don't know if she could still be considered the main character, but if she is a focal point of the series, like moving forward, how really great could her trajectory be? I think it's been so unfortunate for the last few seasons. And moving forward, if she's going, the show is called Glow. Mm-hmm. I assume it's going to be about gorgeous ladies of wrestling and that all the characters will be related to the production, the wrestling production. So if she's going to be bound to the wrestling show, I mean, how much really can her acting career take off beyond that? You know what I mean? As far as, you know, considering the confines of the show, the fact that it's called Glow, you know what I mean?
It is called that, but, like, I think the show is doing a good job as it goes on of, like, keeping Glow as kind of a central thing. Like, the wrestling thing is the backdrop, but also allowing for stories outside of that. You know, like, Bash's whole arc, that really has nothing to do with the wrestling stuff.
Well, yeah, I know what I'm saying, but, like, her job is a wrestler. If right. she's going to be a successful actress, she will no longer be a wrestler.
But maybe we see more stuff in the next season, like, you know, her trying out for that role in the season. Like, you know, they had these things, this whole movie thing on the side with Marc Maron mm-hmm. and everything, like that had really no connection to the Glow stuff. So they could conceivably have her kind of like begrudgingly signing up for this new, by the way, she buys a TV station mm-hmm. from Undertex basically mm-hmm. at the end. And she says, hey, I'm going to start my own wrestling promotion, which I assume would not be named Glow because they don't have the rights to it. So yeah, it could be that she's doing the wrestling stuff, but she's aggressively trying to like apply or audition and stuff
yeah,
on the side.
I just figure since it's called Glow and it's about mm-hmm. the wrestling that she, if she does, you know, like we've talked about, there's a ton of room for our peripheral stories in this show beyond just the wrestling, what happens in the ring. But because it's called Glow, if she does make strides in her acting career, I think it will ultimately fail again because she has to be a wrestler, right? I mean, she has to be related to the wrestling production somehow.
It's true, but I could see the show continuing to distance itself from, like, you know, it could still be called Glow. They're not going to change the name of the series, but, like, you know, Debbie's going to start a new promotion, not going to be called Glow. You know, the wrestling could become even more and more of an afterthought as we just follow this core cast and mm-hmm. what they're doing with their lives, basically.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate. I feel like it's a unique premise.
It is.
And to like, abandon that.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I like this season a lot, but I, you know, it distanced itself from the wrestling a little bit more than I would like. Mm-hmm. And I think the end was kind of sudden. There were some things that I was not as hot on this season, but overall, I think the main character arcs of Debbie and Bash, specifically Debbie, I think Debbie and the actress Betty Gilpin did mm-hmm. such a great job of going from, like, you know, she was very much playing this, like, Ice Queen character for certainly the early parts.
Well, understandably. I mean...
Yeah. And but she's done a really good job of just, like, kind of growing and, like, easing into this, like, producer role and being super good and confident about this. And I think she's my favorite character on the show.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah, I thought this season was... I mean, it was okay. If on a scale from like 1 to 10, I'd probably give it like a 7. I think it was fine. I just feel like this show in general, it's not a show that I necessarily like count the days till it's out.
Right.
It's a show that it's like oh this show's back on, let's watch it. It's not something that I don't think for a lot of people it would be anyone's favorite. It's not setting the world on fire is what I'm saying.
No, in fact, like we've seen every episode. I've enjoyed the show quite a bit. But even like before we sat down to do this podcast, I had to kind of remember like, oh, man, I don't really remember the story beats from the first two at all. And like reading over it again, it's like, oh, right. Justine was one of the wrestlers who fell in love with a pizza guy and stole the camera and messed like, you know, all this stuff that I totally forgot. Mm-hmm. Like there were very few like big moments. I remember Betty doing cocaine and Debbie doing cocaine and breaking Allison Brie's leg at that one point. You know, like there were some big moments, but you know, it's not a challenging show necessarily, but it's kind of nice popcorn, mostly light entertainment. You know,
yeah, it's nice to have like a fully female driven cast.
And it, you know, a comedy. I would say if I had to throw into a genre, I'd say comedy. But like, I think when it does veer into serious topics, I think it's handled it well.
Yes,
you know, it's not like ham fisted or anything. I don't think so. Yeah, overall, I did enjoy it quite a bit. I think seasons 1 and 2 I would put above this one, but still had a good time watching it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious to see where it goes.
Indeed. So that'll be it for our discussion of Glow here, and we will wrap up before we. I don't know where I was going with that.
Just keep going. Curious to see what you would do with that.
Oh, should I just keep going? I was writing down my edit point. Okay, what did I say? We will
wrap up.
And we will... I already said we're going to wrap up our discussion of Glow, right? And we're going to... Before we wrap up this episode...
Ah, there you go.
We'll do some housekeeping here. First of all, we really want to thank everyone that helps us out with the listener support program.
Thank you so much.
With Panning the Stream. This is something we really love doing each and every week. Sitting, you know, what could be better? We're watching shows together. We're sitting here discussing it. And then the folks at home can listen. And we really appreciate anyone who listens and certainly the folks who go to PanningTheStream.com and click support this podcast.
You guys are the best.
Yes. Anchor does their support program thing where you can sign up for $1, $5, or $10 a month. Or you can do it once and cancel. No problem at all there. Totally secure. Do it on your phone, Apple Pay, whatever you want to do. And we got a handful of supporters. And they help us out each month here, help keep the lights on. And every time we get a new supporter... We've got a little bit of a backlog here, but we will get to each and every one of them.
One a week. If this is your week, it's your special week. I don't want to inundate you with a bunch of bonkus and then it becomes a not special week.
No, it is a normal week here in that we will give you one custom bonku just for you at home, a bonku new supporter of Panning the Stream. Bonk, do we have a new supporter this week? I just said we have a backlog, so just play with me here.
We do indeed. Play with you.
Yeah, I realized right after I was hoping we could coast past time, but play along, I think. Okay. Play with me.
So like I've said previously, if this isn't your week, sit tight. Your week is coming. I absolutely promise you 100% that you will have a bonku in the near future. So Michael, if you're listening, this bonku is for you. Screaming at the sky that she could not endure it. Life without Michael.
Whoa. Who's she? There's a mystery with this bonku.
You know, I've been trying to, like, place our supporters in, like, a story in my mind, you know? And in Michael's story, there's someone, maybe an unrequited love, that without Michael in her life, she can't even, what's the point of going on? That's what I wanted to get across with that bonku.
I can't wait till we launch our side podcast where you just describe the stories behind every bonku in your head.
Well, if I were to go back and do those early bonkus, there wouldn't be much to work
No, you're just trying to get syllables lined up. So that is the bonku, Michael, for this week. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Michael.
For all you folks at home, if you want to give us suggestions or recommendations or feedback or anything at all, you can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. If you want to know what we're going to be watching on the next week's episode, follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. Bonk, do you have any suggestions for the folks at home?
I do, Daniel.
What do you got?
Well, as everyone knows, since I mention it every podcast, I have a brother, Tommy, who's the guitar player for Thank You Scientist, and he's obviously an incredible talent. And I have another brother, Dan, who's also incredibly talented. Both my brothers are jazz musicians. I come from a very music-centric family.
Yes, you do.
And Dan is the drummer for the Tea Club, which is like a folk prog rock band, and they put out very beautiful music. It's very perfect music for walking and just chilling out to. They just released their new album called If When. Right now it's streaming on theteaclub.net, and by the time this episode goes up, it should be on Spotify. So check it out, The Tea Club.
All right, there you go. That is a suggestion straight from Bonk for her brother Dan and his band, The Tea Club.
Yes.
I have a suggestion that I believe you also would probably suggest. So I go to PAX conventions each and every year. And from the beginning, since I've been going to PAX, there is a fan that I have talked to every single time who is always talking about meditation. He's made great strides every single time I see him. If you're listening, you know who you are. And it's so cool to see his progress. And every once in a while, he'll bring a little gift, a little fun surprise. And I do think he listens to this podcast because at the last one, he gave me a Blu-ray of My Hero Academia: Two Heroes, which is a film loosely in the canon of My Hero. It's between seasons 2 and 3. And we watched it. It is the standalone film and just a real fun story. You know, we're not going to do a full episode on it or anything because, you know, it is a movie. As far as I know, it's not on Netflix or anything.
It's a great movie.
But we had a real good time with it. Mm-hmm. Really, really cool for those characters there.
I think you definitely have to be familiar with the series to appreciate what's happening. I don't think you could go in blind.
Yeah.
But it is like it does feel like a movie. It doesn't feel like an episode of the show.
Totally. Yeah. Deku's got his own kind of arc in the movie there that I really enjoyed. So I really like that a lot. And while I bring up My Hero, I just want to let people know, I know it's been a while since we did season 3, but we did just come off of 5 episodes of Evangelion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this show, we love My Hero and, you know, had plenty to say about Evangelion and everything. And we will get to season 3 of My Hero. But, you know, a lot of people listen to the show and we've heard you on Twitter, you know, not everyone's as into anime and everything. So we are going to take a little break from anime here, but we will be getting back to My Hero at some point.
Yes.
in the future here. But we'll be doing some one-offs while we get there. So
indeed.
Hope you will stick with us for the ride. Bonk, I hope you will stick with me in life on this podcast.
No, we're getting a divorce now. Oh. I waited till the podcast to tell you, sign these papers.
Oh, jeez. Oh, the ratings are going to be huge. It's the divorce episode. Ratings. That's what people say about podcasts.
I'll stick by you through thick and thin, my darling.
You too, kid.
I love
you. I love you.
Don't call me kid.
Yeah, that's weird. Why did I say kid?
I'm not your daughter.
No, not at all. That'd be weird. That'd be very weird.
That would be horrible.
Yeah, that'd be, the cops should be kicking in the window right now.
If it would be an old boy situation where I'd have to hire some, like, crazy psychic to liquidate my memory.
Yeah.
From that ever happening.
Yeah, and then when someone appears to kill me, I'd have to be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I had this coming. So, I've seen Old Boy. You showed me Old Boy. That movie's fucking crazy.
Love that movie.
Yeah, it's really, there's another suggestion for you. Old Boy, if you want to feel
Korean
good.
The Korean Old Boy from 2004.
Yeah, not the Josh Brolin one. That's a weird note. Didn't expect to talk about Old Boy until I weirdly called you kid.
Oh, we should end this now.
Should we just stop podcasting at this point?
Yes.
Say goodbye to the folks at home.
Let's jump ship. Thanks, Tom, for the theme song.
Thanks, Tom, Anna, for the theme song. Thanks to everyone for listening. And thanks, wife, for joining me.
Thank you, husband.
Goodbye, folks.
Bye.